What we call Halloween was called Samhain by the Irish. Samhain was a festival where they marked the beginning of the dark half of the year. On this show, it's always the dark half of the year. I don't think I've told you a story yet in a year and a half that wasn't suitable for the spooky season. But in the spirit of Halloween, the favorite holiday for me and my family, I wanted to tell you a very special story. Not just a Halloween story, not just a Samhain story, but a story that calls on that feeling, that memory that you have of your last Halloween trick or treating. As much as I love Halloween now, and I do, I've always felt that it's something particularly remarkable for children. And then you get a bit older, and you have to leave it behind. For Dolan, he saw the writing on the wall, and so he went into his last Halloween with eyes wide open, only to see things he'd never seen before. On Samhain, the living and the dead walk side by side, and what lies underneath a costume may not be human at all. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem, killers, cannibals, and cults, fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales, and terrible truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. Dolan was waiting out in front of his house, resplendent in his new Spider-Man costume, watching all the trick-or-treaters walk past. His mother hadn't made it home yet. She was still out, working late, like she was always working late. The house behind him was dark. There were a few scattered Halloween decorations, but it was pretty anemic. Even with the colorful skeleton dangling from the tree, the string of purple lights around the front door, and that half-rotten jack-o'-lantern in the drive, it was still a pretty sad state of affairs. Dolan counted dozens of kids going by. Most of them were new to him. This neighborhood always had a huge turnout for trick-or-treating, but this year was the biggest ever. But he was staying patient. He was waiting for his regular Halloween partner, his mom. And he was growing increasingly worried that she wouldn't make it in time. And that would have been a real shame. He'd just gotten this amazing Spider-Man costume, the one that he had been wanting. His mom had surprised him with it just the night before. It was so new, it still had the creases along the shoulders from where it had been folded up so tightly in the packaging. Dolan had been afraid that she was going to use the whole "money is tight" routine on him again, like she did last year. And, like she did last year, he thought she might make a costume for him. The mere thought of going out in a homemade Spider-Man costume had kept Dolan up for nights on end, made him resort to prayer. But his mom had come through, and he looked awesome. Finally, he spotted her, drifting out of the shadows with long, spooky white hair and a tall, pointed black hat. A witchy woman, if ever there was. They hugged, and he proudly displayed his candy bag. Together, they set off down the street in search of sugary treasures. So, his mom asked him, you think this is the last time? And Dolan winced at the question. He'd expected it. He'd actually been considering this same question himself a lot the last few days, but he still winced. See, Dolan loved Halloween. I mean, he loved it. You could keep Christmas, birthdays, keep whatever. Just leave Halloween alone. It was perfect. At the same time, he knew that he was turning 14 soon. He was on the verge last year. This year, he was barely holding on by his fingertips. This would have to be his last year trick-or-treating. Instead of saying that, he told her he would decide next year. And she laughed. She said, "That's what you said last year." And then he laughed too. For a while, they walked in silence, taking it in, soaking in the costumes, the decorations, the lights, the wispy clouds drifting in front of that deep yellow crescent moon, the whooping and wailing in the distance, snatches of music in the air, and that little electric itch on your skin that made you know there was the possibility of chaos erupting at any time. It was all those little things that made Halloween, Halloween. Of course, the witch explained, it isn't really Halloween at all. It's Samhain. What's that? Dolan asked. She spelled it out for him and he says, oh, Samhain. But it's not Samhain. It's Samhain, the festival of the harvest in ancient Ireland. It was the one night a year when the barrier between the world of the living and the world of the dead was at its thinnest. This was the one night when spirits could come back. Only in certain places, though. Holy places, burial mounds, the places where people died. And some of these ghosts were evil or seeking revenge, but there were others that were lonely and wanted only to mingle with living people again. And then there were some that didn't even realize they were dead and kept attempting to go about their normal lives. On Samhain, people would leave treats outside their houses to appease the spirits so that they wouldn't try and come inside. And they dressed in costumes so that the spirits would not recognize who was alive and who was dead. Ahead, they saw a little boy standing in the street, staring at one of the houses. This boy was very young, maybe 6 or 7, wearing wizard's robes made from terry cloth. The boy watched trick-or-treaters come and go from the front door and never moved. There was an old woman gleefully handing out candy with a rictus grin on her face. The boy just stared at her. Dolan and his mother stopped, quietly watched. Another group of trick-or-treaters came and went, and the chaperone, the adult that was with them, knelt down next to that little boy and asked if he was lost. The boy didn't look up. He just said, I died in that house. Where did you die? Dolan and his mother kept walking. Only now the boy was carrying a chill on his back. Before too long, his mother stopped him again. And they watched as two trick-or-treaters in matching costumes squared off over a disputed pillowcase full of candy. Two girls shouted and yelled and pulled and pushed and punched. And when the bag finally ripped, the candy spilled out across the concrete, and all the costumed children that had gathered around to watch the fight lunged for it, going down on hands and knees, taking whatever they could grab. Except for two of them. Two children dressed in old-timey clothing who stood watching on with curiously cocked heads. Dolan's mother leaned in close and said, "That's how you know they're ghosts." And then she ushered him along. "Don't let them see that you know. Come on, we still have a lot of candy to get." Dolan and his mother walked the dimly lit roads of the small suburban enclave, up and down quiet cul-de-sacs, and back and forth through sleepy lanes. It seemed like there was a backyard party going on every block, with haunting music mixed with laughter and snippets of shouts and conversations bleeding through into the street, mixing with the furtive whispered planning of teenage pranksters, the goofy giggling of the trick-or-treaters, the ringing of doorbells, the rustling of plastic bags, the shouting of trick or treat. It was, to Dolan, the sweet music that you could only hear on Halloween. As they walked, the old witch told him more stories. Dolan had thought he'd heard every Halloween story there was, and he might have. But he'd never heard of Samhain, and he found it fascinating. It turned out there was a lot more to it than just ghosts coming to visit. There were the Fomorians. Fomorians are a supernatural race, hostile, monstrous, that actually predates the Irish people. The Fomorians are living personifications of blight and drought and darkness and chaos and famine and death. The name Fomorians roughly translates, depending on the translator, to either the Great Underworld Ones or the Nether Demons. There are some modern scholars that think the Fomorians may be the earliest known reference to the Ghastly Ones. In old times, sacrifices and offerings were made to the Fomorians every Samhain to appease their wicked appetites and their bloodlust going into the harshness of winter. And if enough sacrifice was not rendered, then the Fomorians came here to collect. Right then, a black cat bounded into the street in front of them. They both stopped short and watched it run, like it was on a mission towards a dimly lit house on the other side of the road. As the cat approached, the line of jack-o'-lanterns sitting on fence posts along the front yard, it cast a strange shadow. It was not the shadow of a cat. It was something else. The shadow was oblong and misshapen, and looked to be scurrying on eight long, spindly legs. But he just saw this flickering shadow for a second, and then he was distracted when he realized that the jack-o'-lanterns were not pumpkins at all. Each and every one of them, sitting on top of each and every fence post, was a human head that had been scooped clean and set with a votive candle in its wide open mouth. This house couldn't really be there. Dolan realized he'd never seen it before. He lived here. He would know. He would have seen it. This wasn't real. The house wasn't there. It was a trick of the Samhain spirits. He bolted back to his mother's side. who was still talking. She hadn't missed a beat. Now she was telling a story about a place called Nemed, where they gave 2/3 of everything they had to the Fomorians come Samhain. 2/3 of their crops, their food, their supplies, even 2/3 of their own children, offered up as sacrifice to appease these ancient monsters. In another part of the country, they worshipped and feared the dark god of the burial mound, Crom Crauch. Come Samhain, they offered blood sacrifices at his stone idol. Crom Crauch was once a benevolent being, an entity of power and true magnificence that appeared to people as a mountain of gold. But it had become poisoned somehow, and over the centuries, the millennia had transformed into a massive and hideous snake. So greedy for blood was Crom Crauch that the kingdom slaughtered 3/4 of their own number to slake his thirst. The story of St. Patrick driving the snakes out of Ireland is really just a bedtime story version that was written by the Christian monks as a way of covering up the true story of St. Patrick and the snake god Crom Crauch. But that's more of a St. Paddy's Day story. I digress. Dolan was so into these stories that he walked past 6 houses that were obviously giving out Primo candy. He was starting to think that maybe the candy wasn't even that important this time. Not anymore. Maybe it was that he was looking at it through older eyes, knowing that this was his last Halloween, but he felt content to just enjoy it, to just enjoy the time. He saw a trio of masked figures sitting on a rooftop, watching the children pass. And he wondered if they were ghosts. But then one of them laughed, and another one lit up a cigarette, and Dolan relaxed a little bit. 2 of the masked figures got up and climbed down off the roof and out of sight. The 3rd one stayed where it was, hovering a few inches off the rooftop, whimpering softly. They kept walking until Dolan found himself pleasantly distracted by a very unusual party. Mr. Greenlee, who lived 3 streets over, had managed to turn his front lawn into something resembling a 1950s sock hop. There were a handful of open-sided tents set up in the grass along the front of his house, and a scattering of chairs and love seats around a makeshift dance floor in the middle of the front lawn, around which there were greasers and soches, poodle skirts and ankle socks, hair both ridiculously poofed up and extremely slicked back. They had a singer who wore Buddy Holly glasses next to a guy in a greasy blue tux playing a tiny piano. There was a bar, a punch bowl, and a couple of tables of candy for the kids. There must have been at least 50 people there, easily. And while most of them were dressed appropriately, there were still a lot of random costumes throughout of the people who had just dropped by on a whim. His mother tugged Dolan's hand, and they walked over to one of the candy tables, and then on through to the little dance floor itself. The singer sang, the piano man played his tiny piano, and the old witch tried to get her son to dance with her. Dolan looked away, too embarrassed to dance in public, even if it was just with his mom. But then something caught his attention. He saw Mr. Greenlee himself strutting out onto the dance floor. The old man could not have been a day under 80, and yet he was moving more gracefully than Dolan had ever seen him. He was wearing a cardigan sweater and his skinny little necktie that must have been as old as he was. He turned and he pointed at a young woman wearing a pleated skirt and knee socks. She looked a little reluctant, but Mr. Greenlee dragged her out there, and they started to dance. She was so young, Dolan thought it had to be Mr. Greenlee's granddaughter, or maybe even a great-granddaughter. But as far as he knew, the old man had no family. At the end of the song, Mr. Greenlee leaned down and tenderly kissed the girl on the lips, and she kissed him back. And then the wind started to pick at her edges, and she faded into grayscale before drifting away like ashes in the breeze. Mr. Greenlee wiped away a tear and slowly shuffled off the dance floor. His mother leaned in and told him, "On Samhain, the rules can be broken. That's what makes it so special, for good or for bad." They kept on walking, looking for houses that had not yet been picked clean. With the sheer number of trick-or-treaters this year, there were a lot of porch lights that were turning off early, well out of treats. But Dolan wasn't ready to head back home, not yet. This was his last Halloween. Even if the road was leading him home, he wanted to drag his feet and take a little while longer, so he asked for another story. "Okay," his mother said. "I have one more, and it's the best one. The king of Connacht gave his court the ultimate test of bravery one Samhain night. He offered a huge cash prize to whichever member of his court could make it to the gallows and tie a band around the ankle of a hanged man. The gallows was where public executions were held, and the bodies were often left there to hang for days on end. Fomorians and demons and ghosts of the dead would often linger in the shadows of the gallows and reach out to grab anyone who came by in the light of the moon. Several members of the court tried and failed, but then one young man manages to get through and tie a band around the hanged man's ankle. The dead man rewarded the boy with the horrific vision of the future and the bloody slaughter of his entire kingdom, unless they provided the right sacrifice the following Samhain. By the time she wrapped up the story, they were just half a block away from home. They approached, but then she started to hang back. Her eyes were turning dark. "Let's have a race," she said. She pointed to the skeleton in the tree. "The first one to place a band around the ankle of the hanged man is the winner and gets all the candy." Dolan took off running at a dead sprint. It wouldn't have been a contest, even if it was a contest, which it wasn't, because the old woman had not moved a single step. Dolan grabbed the skeleton by the ankle. "I don't have a band," he said. Deeply sad, his mother said, "Look around your own ankle." It was only then that Dolan realized the skeleton hanging from the tree before him was wearing a Spider-Man costume. Brittle bones under cheap blue and red plastic. The naked bones of his neck were twisted and wrapped up in a darkened string of Halloween lights. His mother watched on, tearing up. She hated this part. It was the same every year, that moment when Dolan understood what was happening to him. And he turned to look at her, his eyes pleading with his mother, his hands reaching out for her as he slowly faded away. She'd been working late a lot back then. And even though she knew how important Dolan's last Halloween trick-or-treating was to him, she'd still worked late. She knew what it meant, and she still chose to work late that night anyway. But no longer. Now she was here, on time, every Samhain, year after year, on that one night when she could see her dear boy again. She had long ago sold that house, moved out of town, but she always returned every Samhain night, so that she could walk next to him, enjoy his company, tell him stories, distract him from realizing what he was. Every Samhain for the last 36 years. Ever since she had come home from a late shift to find her only child dangling over the front lawn, his neck snapped, hanging from a tree. Was it an accident, or had he done it on purpose? Every year she wanted to ask him. Every year she just couldn't bring herself to. And every year she hoped that this would be his last Halloween. Thank you for listening to A Scary Home Companion in One Last Halloween. You can subscribe to the show through Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio, Buzzsprout, amongst other places. Send feedback to the show to ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com or find me under that name on Facebook and Instagram. While you're at it, do me a solid and leave a glowing review for the show. Deeply appreciate it. This episode was produced and edited by Jeff Davidson, featuring music by Haunted Corpse with A Severed Head Speaking and Maggot Corpse, Crimson Curtain with Vanishing, Remora with A Few Notes from a Grave, The Undermasks with Have You Seen the Ghost of John? And as always, theme music by Chelsea Oxendine. Enjoy Samhain and have a happy Halloween. Entering into this holiday season, I'm going to be busy working on the next batch of episodes. But the show will be back the first part of November with a trio of Thanksgiving terror tales that I call Stuffed, Skinned, and Carved. And then in the beginning of December, look out for Christmas Stories for Weird Kids.